providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing on with the weekend edition of the KE Report, we are continuing to focus on the commodity sector, a bit more of a focus on the precious metals, as we are chatting with Dave Erfley, founder and editor of the Junior Miner Junkie. Now, Dave, as we're recording this, still fairly early on in the week, it's Tuesday as we are chatting, and we are going through still this general correction in precious metals. Right now, the gold price is just below $2,000 an ounce. Silver is a little under $24. Still, if you look at a longer-term chart, this correction is very much expected and hasn't broken any key technical levels by any means. It's really trading in this range as we're, it seems like, waiting for more of a breakout. I was going to ask you in terms of what levels would get you more worried about this correction, but as we were chatting off mic, you brought up a question that I think is even more relevant here is this a base, a longer-term base being formed in the precious metals price, or is this a top being built? What do you have to say to this?
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like we talked about last week, when we came into last week, right out of the gate, we had the silver price and the miners showing strong relative weakness to the gold price, and that was hinting that we were going to get this correction. But yeah, in the bigger picture, If you're a generalist, you know, and you've pretty much avoided this sector for the past decade, which most of them have, you take a look at the gold price, and even though it's in a technical bull market, it keeps making higher highs and higher lows recently. In the bigger picture, in the last 3 years, it's gone nowhere. It's just gone sideways. And that begs the question, is this a huge top or is this a huge base? Well, if we take a look at what the drivers would be for it to be a huge base, that would be the major driver, I believe, is the macroeconomic picture, the loss of faith in government and the loss of faith in central banks and their monetary policies, all the debt that we've created. It's over $300 trillion now in the world, and all the debt payments that are going to come out of this, and this debt ceiling that's happening right now. And you have a president that has actually come out and said he would possibly invoke the 14th Amendment after this debt ceiling is resolved, which means that the U.S. would have no debt ceiling, and the world's largest economy would have, you know, no fiscal responsibility in its government spending. So, you know, we have all these catalysts for it to be a base that's being created, yet I don't see any catalyst for a downside move for this being a top. I mean, we had the top callers really crowing when the gold price lost that 1675 level late last year, and it turned into to be a huge bear trap. I mean, there was all these prognostications of the gold price. Yeah, here it is. It's lost that 1675 level, and now it's going down to 1500, 1400, where it broke out, where it formed its last base below 1400 for 6 years. And then once it broke out, it ran up to over $2,000 an ounce. Well, like I said, that was basically a false breakdown. And we had a triple bottom formed on its monthly chart at 1620. And now we've had a 30% move over the past 6 months in the gold price of over $450. That's a huge move. And that needs to consolidate. And not only that, once it got to $4 from its all-time high at 2089, it became technically overbought. As a matter of fact, it's been technically overbought on a weekly basis ever since the regional banking crisis got it there in early March. So this is all healthy as far as the gold price is concerned. And if you take a look at the gold stocks, I mean, they did their job. They went up 65%. The GDX and GDXJ went up 65% from their lows in September. So they had a 2x move from the gold price.
Yeah, Dave, if you look at it from the big picture like that, it paints a lot different picture than when we get stuck in the weeds or when people get stuck in daily volatility. Because if you think back to last year when we were talking on a lot of these episodes, everybody was worried that there was a double top in place, that the 2020 August high of 2089 and then the 20, I think it's like 2073, 2078 was also hit in 2022 during that Ukraine war situation. And everybody was in that camp of, wow, it's a double top. It looks like it's going to pull back. And when gold did break 1675, they said, oh, look, it's 2013 all over again. It's going to be a waterfall decline. But that's not what happened. And we have to deal in what actually happened. What actually happened was, as you say, a big reversal in fortunes. It was a false breakdown. Gold tacked on $400, but not just added a lot of money. Silver and the mining stocks led the way higher before gold even started getting off the bottom. And I would point out that gold also has made a higher monthly high, a higher quarterly high, and came within a dollar or two of making a higher weekly high, all-time highs, all-time quarterly highs, all-time monthly highs. Those are very big, longer-term positives. And it also is true that most markets don't just make a triple top or something like that. There are real legitimate W-shaped double bottoms and M-shaped double tops, but a triple top is usually something that gets tested again, a fourth time, a fifth time. And it seems like the tenor of the market changed at the fourth quarter of last year, and the odds are more likely that this is not a triple top and just a topping process, but actually it's something that's going to get knocked on that door and it's going to keep bumping its head against it until it finally breaks through. Is that how you're reading it, or do you think there legitimately is a reason to be concerned that it's a top?
Yeah, so that's definitely how I'm reading it. I mean, if you go back through history, in technical analysis, you know, if you have a major resistance level, and that 2,000-2,100 level has been a major resistance level in the gold price for 12 years now, not just the past 3 years, because it came within $75 of 2,000 back in 2011. That's been major resistance for a very long time. And typically you have three tests of that major resistance. The third test fails, like a three strikes you're out type of situation that is conveying to the market. You know, people sell, and what needs to happen is it needs to come down and build strength for a breakout. And like I said, once it got to this third test, it was very overbought. And it had gone up 32% in 6 months. So, you know, this is healthy. It needs to happen. And once we have this pullback, I believe the fourth test will be successful. And there are several catalysts out there that could make it successful. I mean, we need a very strong catalyst to break the gold price above $2,100 on a monthly basis close. I've been saying in the past that, first of all, we need a monthly basis close above 2,000 to bring more momentum traders into this sector and solidify a bottom at 2,000. And that almost took place last month. The gold price came within pennies of closing above $2,000 on a monthly basis in April. And I think it closed it at 1999.10 or 1999.20 or something. And it did not get that $2,000 monthly close. So, you know, all this is very healthy in the long-term picture, because, you know, if the gold price would have kept going and broke out above 2,100, being this overbought, it wouldn't have held. And it wouldn't have been on a strong enough catalyst to hold. We need a strong catalyst, and a strong catalyst like a debt ceiling default, which you don't want to see, of course, or a geopolitical catalyst, which you don't want to see. But what we do want to see, what everybody's waiting for, is that Fed pivot. And I think it's going to be farther out than people think. And that's what the gold price is telling us right now, that the gold price is already priced in this pause that's likely going to take place either in the upcoming meeting in June or the following meeting. But the pivot might be farther out than people expect.
So, Dave, to this point, you made the comment earlier that what would be the catalyst to pull the price of gold down or continue this fade in precious metals prices? You didn't see too many catalysts on the negative side. To take the other side of that, it is all about expectations, right? And expectations are for a recession in the second half of the year. Inflation expectations are still expecting inflation to stay high. Banking crisis. There's still a banking crisis. There's also a war still going on in Ukraine. What if these fade a little bit and these expectations aren't as dire for everything? Couldn't that be that catalyst to push prices lower?
Oh, sure, it could. The war could end. You know, the recession fears could end. I mean, all these things could end, but I just don't see that happening. I see war ramping up even further, unfortunately, and I see the banking crisis, you know, becoming worse. You know, half these regional banks are insolvent. If you saw, there was a report that came out a couple weeks ago that showed that half these regional banks are insolvent. So the regional banking crisis is not going to be solved overnight. The recession fears that have come into the marketplace, I don't see them going away anytime soon because the Fed continues to raise rates. You know what the Fed's modus operandi is? They continue to raise until something breaks. You know, they chose, you know, the banking crisis. They knew that was going to happen if they were going to continue to raise rates. That's happened. They're trying to contain it. But if they raise rates one more time, that brings in more possibilities of problems coming in. And the gold price will eventually sniff that out. I mean, but I do see the gold price possibly coming down to test the 1880, 1900 level. I would not be surprised to see that. That would be a healthy correction from where it's gone from November at 1620 to almost 2089. It's all-time high last week.
Well, Dave, you are the junior miner junkie. So let's also shift into the mining stocks and look at how they've responded. They did have a big move out of the base last year in September and moved up for really the next 6-7 months and had a good run. But when you look at how they're valued just historically against this metals price, a lot of the negative comments have been that it's because inflation has whittled away their margins and crimped their margins some. But if we do get a price breakout, wouldn't the opposite be true? Wouldn't we see a margin expansion scenario, and wouldn't we see, you know, more generalist investors just coming in looking at, hey, this sector is actually making money compared to a lot of the general equity sectors that aren't going to make any revenues for maybe 20 years. So in contrast to a lot of the general equities that are overvalued, do you think more analysts will start finding the undervalued side of the junior mining space and even in the producers and the mid tiers?
Yeah, but we definitely need that gold breakout first. And if you take a look at the volumes that are being generated on these declines, they're lower each time. We've had these run-ups, you know, we've had these run-ups in the GDX and the GDXJ, these sharp moves higher. But, you know, when the 40 level was reached in the GDXJ, we saw some, you know, after making a low at the 25, 26 area, that was almost a 50% move higher. You know, we had some weakness come in, but the volume was really low. So, but the volume was really low on the way up also, which is just telling me that the generalists are still not in this sector and they will not be in the junior resource space, in the precious metal junior resource space, until they see a breakout in the gold price. And that continues there continues to be evidence of that when you're seeing these sell-offs and these moves higher are happening on low volume. Now, granted, we are seeing higher volumes on the move up in a lot of these juniors. You're seeing spike in volume on moves up. And then when they consolidate that move, the volume has been a lot lower on the way down.
Dave, what do you take away from the action in the majors, though? Because we have seen a complete consolidation in the major stocks. This has been happening for, I think, 2 years now. And the most recent deal of Newmont buying Newcrest is actually Newmont focusing a bit more on copper. Is this a bigger story that we need to pay attention to?
Yeah, as far as the majors are concerned, the Newmont taking over Newcrest, I mean, this is huge for the sector because they're becoming not only they were already the largest gold producer, but now they will become the largest gold producer. They'll be producing twice as much as the second major, which is Barrick. And the funny thing is Barrick was attempting to take over Newmont just about 4 or 5 years ago. And they ended up forming Nevada Gold Mines together, but Newmont has continued to grow, and now they're twice as big as Newmont. But yes, I mean, you've also heard Barrick, the CEO of Barrick, Mark Bristow, say they want to concentrate more on copper as well. They see the opportunities in the copper space, and they want to produce more copper as well. But it's funny, you hear Mark Bristow talk about it, and then you see Newmont doing it. And I know Newmont is going to divest a few mines in Western Australia because one is overly mature and the other one is too small to fit their profile. But they're still going to be the largest gold mining company by far, and they're also going to be paying a 3.5% dividend, while Barrick is only paying a 2% dividend. So you've also heard Bristow say that we're not going to buy a major just for the sake of getting bigger. He hinted at of them possibly starting to take out a junior or two to acquire some more mines. So I think that's going to filter on down into the juniors, because there's plenty of juniors out there that are on sale that are trading at, you know, less than $40 an ounce in the ground, that are just asking to be acquired by some of these companies. With them starting to get cheaper now, I wouldn't be surprised if they start going down the food chain and are starting to acquire some of these juniors.
Well, Dave, just one more question on M&A, because it seems like the vast majority of the deals we've seen the last 2 years, and we have seen dozens of them, have been mostly in the camp of producers taking over producers. Part of the reason is things are so undervalued that it makes a lot more sense to just buy a mine that's already built, that's permitted, that actually has the infrastructure in place. They don't have to construct it. They don't have to deal with the inflation cost of building new mines. They don't have to deal with all of the stakeholders to try to get this thing permitted. And when you look at a lot of the development projects, there are dozens and dozens of them that are quality projects, have good economics on them. Everything looks good. It looks like a good deposit. The team has done a great job de-risking it. And the majors and the mid-tiers aren't nibbling on those. They're buying producing assets. There are a few exceptions like the Great Bear deal. But in general, most of the M&A deals have been producers buying producers. Is that a trend that you think is going to change, or does it make sense that that's the way they're playing it at this point in time?
Yeah, it makes sense that that's the way they're playing it, because, you know, they're waiting like everybody else is waiting for the question that the start of this interview is this a huge top in the gold price, or is this a huge bottom? Remember the last time they started taking over companies when the gold price was at record highs, they started taking out companies. They started taking out lower margin projects. Bulk tonnage, lower margin projects that needed higher gold prices, and that turned out to be a huge mistake. So they don't want to make mistakes again. So I wouldn't be surprised if they're waiting for the gold price to break out before they start taking over some of these projects, because they're going to have to replace those ounces that they're producing. The exploration programs, you know, are not nearly what they used to be 20 years ago. They don't, you know, some of them don't even have exploration programs. So they have to take out the ounces on Bay Street as opposed to trying to prove up the ounces themselves. And they're going to be taking over projects that have multi-million ounce potential. They got to have blue sky potential with multi-million ounces already proved up before they even consider taking them over. I mean, we just had Anglo take out, you know, do a JV with the Cisco for a 50% JV. So that takes that one off the table. They're probably going to eventually take over that project. But I wouldn't be surprised to start seeing more deals like that where a major comes in and takes over, you know, 50% of a project first.
So is that why ounces in the ground are trading for so cheap? Is that they don't carry as much value because these majors, they did take over a lot of ounces in the ground plays, low margin plays back at the top of the cycle. And now we're back at these prices and they still have these assets on the book. So why go out and take out more of the same assets? Look for blue sky, or quite frankly, the assets that they've written down, bring them back onto their books. They already have them in their portfolio.
Right. A lot of these are higher margin, the ones that they're not into now. And some of them they've already taken, you know, 19.9% stake in the company. So they already have a chunk of the company, and it would cost them less to take over the whole company. It would only cost them 80% as opposed to 100% buyout. So this is all in margin, higher margin projects, you know, because a lot of these companies, they still used a higher gold price, higher base case gold price on their economic studies. But, you know, when you had a company like Sabina recently taken over by B2. You know, they used a really low gold price as a base case. That's a very high margin project with huge blue sky potential, but only a few companies could have taken that over because they didn't know how to do business in that kind of climate. You know, we had Agnico being one and B2 being the other, and B2 was the one that took it out.
Well, Dave, just one more question about maybe the earlier stage side of the gold and silver space, and that is the explorers. When you look at it, there's probably about 1,000 explorers, and they're all vying for attention, and they're all raising capital, and they're all going out and doing drill programs. But if you look at their big brothers in the business, the developers that are not getting value for the ounces in the ground, isn't that putting a little bit of a wet blanket over the whole sector right now? There are some rare stories that are hitting amazing discoveries that are getting traction, but let's be real, the vast majority of the explorers aren't getting any traction for the most part. And that's because when you look at the companies that were the explorers in yesteryear, the companies that were really drilling out big deposits over the last, let's say, 5 to 10 years, they are now the developers sitting on million ounces that nobody wants. So the question, we sometimes jest about it, but it's a legit question. Why would you want to get in the sector as an exploration company if you know the future is you're going to keep de-risking this project to the point where you sit on the vine for years and nobody takes you out? Is that strangling some of the interest in the exploration side of the business right now?
Yes, I believe it is. We've said for years that the exploration sector needs to be thinned out. A lot of these companies need to go away. But we always have a financing window that comes in when the gold price pops to keep a lot of these companies alive. You know, and you've also got something that just happened in Mexico that's going to discourage new companies from buying a project in Mexico to try to de-risk that. You know, I mean, tying up a property rights for a long period of time or any period of time in Mexico is going to be very difficult now. So although it doesn't really hurt many of the companies that are already doing business there, it's going to dissuade companies from going into Mexico now.
So where do you like, Dave? Like, I know that you're already loaded up on the stocks you like. We talked about it last year as you were playing that 7-year cycle. You were loading up on the companies you liked. For investors that maybe aren't invested and are seeing this general pullback in companies, what do you like? Where are you focused?
You know, you really have to weed out the companies that we just talked about, you know, early stage companies that don't have a defined deposit. I mean, I really don't see, I haven't seen a point in investing in those for over a year now. It's the companies that have these big projects, that have blue sky potential on these projects. They're de-risked to, you know, they've got strong economic studies already out. They've got plenty of cash. You know, you have to watch the CapEx. A couple of the companies that I already invested in, they had some CapEx blowout problems. And although I made money on the stock earlier in an earlier cycle, I'm down on the stock now on this cycle while they've de-risked the project up to the finance stage or even the construction stage. And I'm down 20 or 30% on it, but I don't see any reason to sell it because they're either at the finance stage or they're constructing the mine. And once the mine is built and starts producing gold, I wouldn't be surprised if it gets taken out eventually. It might even get taken out right before they start producing. But yeah, this is what you hope for when you invest in these things. You're hoping for a takeout. And I believe that the companies that I own, that I'm holding, that are like that, these developers that have these fantastic projects, you know, that are making, that would make serious money even at $1,600-$1,700 gold, I expect them to eventually be taken out. But it's going to take some time, and I'm hoping it takes longer time now because, you know, my upside would be a lot less if they were taken out a lot sooner than I would expect. Like I said, I don't think the majors are going to start really ramping up their M&A until the gold price does get over that $2,100 level.
Okay, Dave, one more then. You talk about blue sky. These assets that we know what's in the ground, we always hear about companies saying blue sky. What do you consider blue sky? What is that factor that draws in these bigger companies?
Well, I'm big on a company that has proven up 3 or 4 million ounces already, and they're showing a proof of concept to the market that there's more there. That's the thing. These management teams know what these majors are looking for. And if they've proved up, if they're in the process of proving up proof of concept that there's over 5, 6, 7, 8 million ounces there, that's going to attract a major.
Okay. Hey, thank you. We'd hear a lot about Blue Sky, right? And it is now. It's not 1 million ounces, not 2 million ounces. It's having a couple million ounces and clearly having that road to even double that, which is tough for companies right now. And you can isolate companies that have large assets that still have exploration potential. I know we all know companies that are kind of stuck with what they have. And unfortunately, you're right, it just doesn't draw in investors or the majors. Hey, Dave, I really appreciate you taking some time and sharing your thoughts more focused on this sector, because look, it's still unfortunately a trader's market. This is not a market where everything is going higher and you can just buy and hold. You do need to be active in this market and isolate those stocks that are quality stocks, especially in the junior category. So, Dave, thanks for joining us on this weekend show. Everyone, thanks for taking time and listening to this weekend show. Please go back through the week on our website and podcast. Listen to all our daily editorials and keep in touch with Shad and I through email. Everyone, again, I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Thanks for joining us.